Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
FM News Talk 97.1. Podcast. FM News Talk 97.1.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride.
All right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom. It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, kid. Keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
A vote against the president's national emergency declaration is a vote to deny the humanitarian and security crisis that's happening at our southern border. So we're urging every member of the Senate, set politics aside, recognize that we have a crisis, the president has the authority under the National Emergencies Act, vote down the resolution of disapproval, stand with the president, and stand for border security. That's what the American people want.
The vice president speaking on the president's declaration of a national emergency and knowing that the Senate would be voting soon to send that back to his desk and say, nope, we want to overturn this, which would then put it in President Trump's hand for a for a presidential veto. This is what the president said earlier.
I don't know what the vote will be. It doesn't matter. I'll probably have to veto. And it's not going to be overturned, and we're going to have our whole thing. It's been the legal scholars all say it's totally constitutional. It's very important. It's really a border security vote. It's pure and simple. It's a vote for border security. It's a vote for no crime.
So that's what the president said earlier. We have now had the vote, and we have discovered that 12 Republican senators, including one, Roy Blunt, voted against the national emergency.
Yeah, it's a surprising number of Republicans, more than expected, joined the Democrats in this vote. It ended up being a total of 59 to 41. That's one of the largest spreads we've seen in recent history when it comes to the United States Senate. We're used to you seeing these razor-thin votes on party lines. Like you just mentioned, Annie, 12 Republicans voted against the declaration of emergency, including, I'll just point out some of the notables here, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Rand Paul, Mitt Romney, Marco.
All those are predictable.
Yeah. Marco Rubio.
Less predictable.
Mike Lee from Utah. And Roy Blunt from the state of Missouri.
Well, we have reached out to Roy Blunt to see if he wants to, if he's available to come talk to us about this, and hopefully we will get his response soon so we can ask him why he chose to vote for this. Remember, this is not so when you're I'm always picturing these things happening and then picturing the conversations that I will then have subsequently with my liberal friends who are always looking for an opportunity because they love me and they think that teasing me and giving me a hard time is fun. That's a very consistent thing in my life. But they'll say, You've got your own Republican senators voting against the president's national emergency. There is no national emergency on the southern border. The wall is just a campaign promise. You can't conflate the two things. The idea that we need border security, the idea that these individuals would support the president's wall, is very different than these senators weighing in this issue on whether or not they think the president was correct to use the power of the executive office to declare a national emergency to then move funds around in the federal government to pay for the wall. It's not the wall. It's how do we pay for the wall? The phrase that you're going to hear over and over and over again is the power of the purse. That is supposed to sit with the people. That the House of Representatives is supposed to be able to, you know, put up this budget and determine with the closest that the federal government gets to you and to me is the House of Representatives. That's why there are so many of them. 538 total representatives in Congress, 435 in the House of Representatives. You're supposed to be able to easily make contact with your congressional representative. So that's why that part of the government is set up that way, so that the dollars that, oh yes, by the way, come from you and me, that they elect to spend, are the most closely representative to the individual people as they possibly can be. Now, the senators here are making the case that the president has usurped that power of the purse responsibility that the Congress has and overstepped his bounds, so they're trying to undo the national emergency. The president's going to veto it, and it will continue on as if they never would have done this. It would still continue on because he's going to overturn the veto, or he's going to veto it. Then it goes back to the House of Representatives. They can overturn his veto, but they need a massive majority to do that, which they don't have. So again, after all of this is said and done, I mean, if you're pro national emergency and you're pro President Trump's decision to do so, you really are pretty much in the exact same place as you were before. And the only thing that's different now is, I'm going to put in air quotes that you can't see while you're sitting at your desk or driving in your car, political fallout of these 12 senators diverting their support for the president. That's the way it's going to be billed. It's, first of all, this is going to be a blip in the course of political conversation. And a week from now, or a month from now, or in 2020, in November of 2020, this is not going to be something that is going to be, you know, the be-all, end-all turning point of this election. If the president is going to be supported in these measures in border security, we have to do our part. We have to make sure that the House of Representatives reflects the way we feel and the way we believe. And we have to make sure that we vote these people in. We didn't do that in 2018. Well, you kind of did in Missouri. You did a good job. Good job, Missouri. But when you look at the country as a whole and you look at how many positions in the House of Representatives were turned over from red seats to blue seats, in large part to the amount of Republican incumbents who elected to retire and not to rerun, this is what happens. I know that if the president could get Congress to work with him in some capacity so that they could have passed some sort of budget that would have included the funding that he intends to use, that's the way he would want it to be. You know how I know this? Because he did everything in his power to try to make sure that they had the opportunity to do that. And in many cases, often on the terms of what the Democrats wanted to ask for. Remember, they wouldn't even have a discussion about this. The Democrats in the House, who are all, you know, up in arms about the power of the purse and being able to control the dollars that get spent or don't get spent in the House of Representatives, those Democrats on the Democratic side of the aisle, they wouldn't even have the conversation. As long as the conversation included some form of wall, they wouldn't come to the table. As long as the conversation was taking place during the government shutdown, not coming to the table. That's what drew this out for so very long. The president finally reopening the government to say, all right, I'll call your bluff on the left. Not Nancy Pelosi, because she's the one who said that she wouldn't give a dollar. And she said, and to President Trump, that she said no when he asked her, if I open the government right now, can we have a discussion about border security? And she says, does it include a wall? And he said yes. And she said no. So this is the party of the left that is there specifically to obstruct the president. And you'll hear a lot of people on the right say, well, they need to, the Democrats need to come to the table and work with the president. No, in a lot of cases, they don't, because they were elected to obstruct the president. Republicans did that to Barack Obama. So we have to send better people into office. We'll take some phone calls here. 314-241-9797 quickly. Tom, thanks for calling the show. Hi, Tom. You there?
Annie?
Yep, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, I called in because I was so mad when I heard about Senator Blunt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jamie Allman used to, and now Mark Cox does, and I haven't heard you talk to him in the afternoon, but there's so many people at 97.1 that treat Senator Blunt with kid gloves, and you know what? He's as much of the deep state as anybody out in D.C. He comes on that radio station and talks like he's all for us here in Missouri, and when he goes back there with the big boys, he's so much a part of the big boy club, I can't even believe it. You know what? He needs to be primaried. He needs to be taken out. We need to have somebody strong. There is no excuse for him going against the president in this state. No excuse whatsoever.
Yeah, Tom, thank you for the phone call. I know there's going to be people who are very frustrated that he went against the president, which is why we've reached out to him. I want to ask him, why'd you do that? You got a state here that saw a lot of love from the president in this past 2018 election when it comes to Josh Hawley's candidacy against Claire McCaskill. President Trump cared a lot about Missouri. So why did you, Senator Blunt, go against the president? And I'd like to hear his answer to that. Maybe his answer would be persuadable. I don't feel like I've ever carried the water for Roy Blunt. But, you know, I think that when you look at why somebody would elect to do this, we need to ask them, why did you do this, and hear from them exactly what that reason is. So I look forward to the opportunity to talk to him about that. Alex, thanks for calling the show.
Hey, Annie, I look forward to hearing you ask old Senator Blunt that. I'll tell you what, there's not a thing in the world he could do now to ever get my vote again, that's for sure. But listen, you know, Annie, they've been kicking this immigration issue down the road for so many years, and I think maybe not anymore, but people have had such a short memory in regards to this deal. They always hide their vote behind a principled stance and all this stuff like Rand Paul and Mike Lee, these libertarians. You know, we expect that stuff from Murkowski and Collins and the Swalwells and all this other business. But, you know, the fact of the matter is we've got 14 million undocumented people in this country right now because these people care more about their political donors than they do about the American people, and it's really time to put a stop to it.
I thank you for the call, Alex. I appreciate it. Do you see this phone board right now? Steve, and Steve. I have three Steves on the line right now. Steve, real quick, I got to take a quick break, but I want to get you on here before we go to break. What do you think?
Yeah, I just called Senator Blunt's office. Naturally, I got a recording saying they couldn't come to the phone right now. They couldn't come because they're afraid to come to the phone. President Trump is more popular in the state of Missouri than Roy Blunt ever thought he would be. Mm-hmm. Nobody, Blunt could have run against President Trump in the presidential primaries. He would not have defeated the president. Senator Blunt is for open borders. He is for crime. He is for drugs.
Steve, thank you for the phone call. I got to take a quick break. The one thing that I like about what Steve said right there is that he called Roy Blunt's office. We're going to take a quick break because when we come back, we're going to speak with the co-anchor of Fox Business Network's After the Bell, Melissa Francis. She's on Outnumbered, and I like her Outnumbered. I think she's great. So I'm going to ask her about this. I'm also going to ask her about a number of other things, so stay tuned for that. Hold on the line. The rest of the show is going to be phone calls. So 314-241-9797. Get your place in line, and as soon as I can get back to the phone calls, I'm going to do that here. If you're not happy with Congress or with Senator Blunt, you need to let him know. It's that simple. He's there to represent you in the state of Missouri. And, you know, listen, I don't think I have to look up how Durbin and Duckworth voted. I'm perpetually sad. Just sad. It's a license plate. Illinois. Perpetually sad. Perpetually disappointed. What a bummer. Yeah, that's what it should be. Illinois. What a bummer.
Rings a nice bell.
Yeah. All right. Melissa Francis from Fox Business. As soon as we come back, don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
There are a lot of proposed solutions to fixing our healthcare system. What, Beto, do you think we should do? And I think we should begin with the end. What is it that we are hoping to achieve? In my opinion, it is guaranteed high-quality healthcare. Why do I say guaranteed? and for everyone, universal. Why do I say guaranteed? Guaranteed because in the instance that you just shared with me, or the knowledge we have of a school teacher in Texas who year before last died of the flu because her copay on her flu medication was $119, it is not enough to be covered. It is not enough to be insured. We absolutely must be guaranteed the ability to see a doctor, to take our child to that therapist, to afford the prescription that could literally save our lives, certainly improve our lives. So I think that has to be the goal that all of us share.
So Beto O'Rourke now running for president, and he's coming to save our lives. That's really good. That's great to hear. Sounds pricey. Here to talk to us about that, the co-anchor of Fox Business Network's After the Bell and on Outnumbered every day, Melissa Francis. Melissa, it's great to have you on the show today. Thanks for squeezing us in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So when you hear Beto O'Rourke making promises about guaranteed high-quality health care, signing on to the $93 trillion New Green Deal, and you look at the economy, the way it is now, and the way that will take us, what kind of reaction do you have to that?
I know my head explodes. it's hard to put into words. I mean, what's amazing to me is just that he asked people to not even think about the math, do the math, don't even try it. You know, if you have a brain, you know that these things can't be achieved. That when they talk about Medicare for all, it really means Medicare for none. Because just look at the numbers. The average Medicare recipient takes four times the amount out of the system than they have put in over their lifetime. Well, that can work because you're only giving it to older people and the rest of us are subsidizing it. But if you let the whole entire country do this, obviously we would run out of money before we even started. But they don't want to look at things like that. And it reminds me of when they were rolling out Obamacare, and you said, well, my Lord, how are we going to put more people on, give them more services, and we're not going to charge anyone for pre-existing conditions? And the president said, your family's doctor bills are going to go down, your insurance bills are going to go down by $1,250 per year every year. And being somebody who studied economics and can do math and, you know, has ever dealt with money, yeah, which is all it takes, I said, how is that possibly true? Unless doctors work for free or hospitals give things away, there's no way you can get more and pay less. And they said, we bend the cost curve. That's not a thing that happens in real life. And it didn't. So I just wonder if people are going to be willing to allow themselves to get lied to again. Wouldn't it be great if we could do all these things? It would be. That would be so nice.
Sure.
But
yeah.
It's a lie.
Yeah. The reality of the situation is very less flowery than the way they would present it to you on a stage or on top of a bar in a restaurant when you're talking about running for president. I want to play for you this clip from the architect of the Green New Deal, Rihanna Gunn-Wright.
I think there's two things. Like you said, there's the benefits that aren't talked about. There's also the cost of inaction, right? Just last year, we lost $91 billion to the U.S. economy from climate change alone. So there is no reality where climate change doesn't cost us money. And we just have to live in that reality. And the Green New Deal is about deciding how we want to spend money and how we want to invest so there are actual returns.
So what does Melissa Francis think about the Green New Deal? It sounds almost like it's a cost-saving measure to implement this massive $93 trillion Green New Deal.
That is an immoral, reprehensible lie, what she just said there. Because if you look at, for example, the giant middle part of the country that these politicians always overlook, there is a thriving carbon-based economy going on there where people are making things, building things, growing things, driving trucks. They are providing the food for everyone in our country. They are using energy to manufacture and create things. They're the heart and soul of this country and keeping it going. What they're talking about is destroying all of those people's lives, destroying their livelihood, destroying their way of life, how they make money, how they produce things for the rest of the country. Now, the people on the fringes don't know that because they don't know, I guess, where their food comes from or how it gets there, but what transportation brings it from the heartland to their table. They don't know any of these things, I guess, or they're lying about it. I don't know which one is worse, but you can't talk about destroying lives, destroying jobs, and destroying a massive part of the economy and say it's about cost. I mean, Republicans would be callous if they talked about cost in the face of life destruction, and that's exactly what Democrats are doing with this. You have to also realize that, you know, when people pointed out that within that Green New Deal, when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez put it up, it talked about things like, you know, a guaranteed you know, wage or payment for people who weren't willing to work. It's not just about the environment. It's about a complete socialist way of life. It's a power grab for the people that are pushing it, a state takeover of all of industry, and they're doing it through the guise of environmentalism, but they want to kill a whole bunch of industries and then pay people not to work and take over the means of production. I think a lot of people who say they're socialists right now don't even understand what the definition of a socialist is. It's a state takeover of the means of production, as opposed to capitalism, which Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez thinks it is a focus on capital and profits and capital above all things. That's not what it is. Mm-hmm. The means of production is in private hands of the people, as opposed to in state hands. That's the difference between capitalism and socialism. She is advocating a power grab for herself, where she seizes the means of production and the money in this country, and then she distributes it, redistributes it back out to the people they see fit, as they are the ruling class and most powerful. What they are advocating is so much more nefarious than what it looks like on the surface. People have to really beware.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. We're speaking with Melissa Francis, co-anchor of Fox Business Network's After the Bell, also on Outnumbered. We love watching you on there to help kind of prep for this show, because we start here at noon Central. And the thing
that's wonderful.
Yeah. So the thing that I really appreciate about what you just said there about taking the power and then redistributing things as they see fit is the premise that these individuals are trying to sell socialism to people who don't understand the foundation of what socialism is that there's a big man out there, you know, the man, the CEOs, the companies, industry, that they want to take power away from, and they tell the people that they want to give the power back to the people. But the power is fully intact and shifted to the very people who want to win these elected offices. That's how disingenuous this is.
No, you hit the nail on the head. They talk about the people, but it is a power grab for those people in Washington. And, you know, they are the ones that get to decide everything about our lives. And I just don't know that I trust, you know, these idiots who can't work together, get anything done. I'm talking about everybody on both sides.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a Republican or Democrat thing. It's that I don't believe that some person way far away in Washington knows what's better for my children, for their education, for my family, that they know how to spend my hard-earned money better than I do. It's not that I don't want to take care of my neighbor and be charitable. I do, and we do. It's that I don't trust them to not do it without taking their very big taste and wasting the rest. Everything government gets involved in is inefficient. We do need them for national security. We do need government for law and order. There's some basic services we need them for. But they want to control everything, and it's not for our benefit. It's for their own glorification. And you know, I hate to paint such a bleak picture, but you have to, when they accuse people who, they cast people who don't want to give them the power as being selfish, as being focused on capital, as hoarding, all these different things, when really they're the ones that are guilty of all the things they say the rest of us are.
Yeah, it's tough to watch when I'm sure, especially from your economic background, to see the disingenuous nature with which it's being presented. My question, last question, because I know you got to get going here, is the first time in my lifetime, I'm 34 years old, that I really saw these types of ideas being pushed out was when Barack Obama ran in 2008, when he was talking about, you know, healthcare on a grand stage. We know Hillary did it when Bill Clinton was in office, but this idea of socialized healthcare, socializing education and making all of these things free, I think that's an easier pitch in the mid-2000s when the economy was on the downward slope. How does this play in Donald Trump's economy right now going into 2020 when things aren't looking too bad?
No, that is a really fantastic point, because we were having a hard time coming back from the financial crisis, and the financial crisis was just dawning. It was an easier pitch. But you're right. Even when you look at survey questions right now on How do you view government? Would you like them to lend you a hand or leave you the hell alone? That was a question that I saw recently in a survey. I think it was the Wall Street Journal, but I'm not sure. It was funny. And it has shifted to leave me alone since the president has been in office. And part of that has to do with the national tone and, you know, the pendulum swings back and forth. But part of it has to do with that people are doing better and feeling better. So they want to keep more of their paycheck and do their own thing. They're looking for less help from the government because they're needing less help. They're being more successful in what they're doing on their own, and they don't think erroneously that government would be the solution. But when you're desperate for a solution, you're looking for help anywhere, so I can certainly understand.
Well, Melissa Francis, co-host of After the Bell on Fox Business, outnumbered. I'll have to tell you, we have Tyrus on every Thursday as well.
And oh, boy! I love him.
We always love Tyrus on Outnumbered, especially when he wears his overalls. And I always say, what do the
when
ladies say to you?
When does he not wear his overalls?
When he walks onto the stage, I go, what do those ladies say to you? And he says, Harris says, only you, Tyrus. It's funny to see.
Very true. Very true.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to speak with you today. Appreciate it.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Melissa Francis on Outnumbered. I always appreciate her insight, the way she weighs in on Outnumbered, especially coming from an economic background, mostly because numbers don't lie. And in a political world that we live in right now, where there's a political position on everything all the time, to have someone be able to come at specific issues and talk about those numbers and the reality of what socialism is and what it means. And if you're being sold a bill of goods because you want everything to be fair and equal opportunity and equal outcome are two different things. Republicans are for equal opportunity. Here's your chance. Go make the most of it. And where you land and where I land and where the person in the car behind you lands, all going to be different. But we have the opportunity to make the most of that. Equal outcome is where everything gets taken in and redistributed equally. And I'll tell you what, equal outcome is not good for anybody. If you want to look at poverty-stricken areas and the very wealthy, if all of that is made equal by the government, we all lose. Melissa Francis, they're talking about it. Quick break. When we come back, Tim, Steve, John, Charles, Jeff, you guys are all up next. Phone calls for the rest of the show. Don't go anywhere. 314-241-9797 if a line opens up.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Great to speak with Melissa Francis from Outnumbered and Fox Business Network's After the Bell. There about a lot of the ideas, the fantasies of people who are trying to pitch socialism to us. But also we have the vote that just took place in the Senate, and 12 Republican senators voted against the president in the national emergency, including one Roy Blunt. And we have a press release from him, and we've made communication with them. I think we're going to get them on next week, probably. But this press release is out.
Yeah. Surprising number of Republicans that joined the Democrats to vote against the president's national emergency declaration. Like you mentioned, 12 Republicans did that, making the final vote 59-41 against the president and that declaration of emergency. Some surprises on the list. I think a lot of people are surprised by Roy Blunt being on that list. And we've had a lot of reaction on the phones and on social media from this vote, and the senator has put out this press release addressing why he voted against the president and the declaration of emergency. This is from the office of Roy Blunt. Quote, I fully support President Trump's commitment to secure the border and build physical barriers wherever they are needed. I have repeatedly said that securing the border has to be the first step in addressing our immigration issues. There are several existing authorities that could be used to support what President Trump wants to do at the border without creating a court case or declaring an emergency. I have encouraged him to use those authorities. This issue will be settled in the courts. That could take months and result in future presidents having emergency authority to use in other ways. Democrats have already made clear that they believe they could use this same authority to impose policies like gun control or the Green New Deal. Those decisions should not be made without congressional action. I was aggressively opposed to the Obama administration's attempts to circumvent Congress's appropriating authority to prop up Obamacare. The same principle should apply regardless of which party occupies the White House.
We're getting on Facebook, facebook.com/Annie Fry Show. You can follow me on Twitter at Annie Fry Show. A lot of people reacting to Roy Blunt's vote to go against the national emergency, and a lot of you want to join the show now. So let's get to these phones, 314-241-9797, if you would like to join us. Tim, thank you for calling the show.
Hey, thanks a lot for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
First, you know, the socialism is a problem because it doesn't work economically, but one of the biggest reasons it doesn't because it ushers in a culture of death, and mm-hmm. it kills people, individuals, through euthanasia and abortion. The very workforce that we're supposed to be putting into this socialist system with Medicaid and Medicare, they're killing them off through abortion. And our Constitution values the individual. It fights for the individual rights. Socialism does the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And you know, the other thing with President Trump's national emergency, I agreed with Blunt's assertions there initially, but the fact of the matter is, Democrats aren't going to look for precedent when they want to do something. That's why they did what they did with Obamacare. And right and law was given to, the power was given to the president to be able to do it. If Congress doesn't want them to do it, they should change the law. But mm-hmm. the Democrats will never change the law because they want to be able to do it themselves.
Yeah.
There's a reason that it was enacted.
Yeah.
And I believe what President Trump is doing for the good of the country is one of the reasons it was enacted.
Tim, I think you're so spot on. Thank you so much for listening and calling. You know, I hearken back to one of the things, I can't even remember what the issue was, and I was saying I don't want the Republicans to go to the 51 vote over the 60 vote because I don't want them to set a precedent. And Tony goes, you think the Democrats aren't going to do that? Of course they are. Obviously,
yeah,
they are.
Senator Blunt makes some valid points in this press release, but the one that says if President Trump does this, then that opens the door for Democrats,
yeah,
to a future Democrat president. That door is there,
yes,
for whatever president decides to open it. And you're not going to tell me that some Democrat president down the road is going to go, man, if Trump would have done it, then I would do it right now.
Totally.
But I guess I can't.
No.
They're going to do whatever they want to do at the time.
And we're so used to,
yes,
to dealing,
yeah,
with that,
I
that
do not believe
unlevel
that.
Playing field.
Yeah.
Charles, thanks for calling the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
A few callers back, the guy called in complaining about Blunt. I never heard anything today. I haven't been, you know, out there listening to anything. I didn't know how Blunt voted. And I know he spoke out against it, but then I figured he'd vote for it. Now, the guy that called, getting back to the guy that called a couple calls ago, said, oh, I ain't voting for him again and this and that and that and this. You know, Blunt, I don't care for Blunt and at all, but, I mean, he's voted 90-something percent Republican, i.e. conservative, his whole career. So I don't know how they can just dump him over one vote.
Yeah, well, Charles, I appreciate your phone call, and I think that people see this issue as a very defining issue. And when people are conflating, not necessarily even wrongfully so, the idea of the national emergency declaration with the idea of the need for border security, these are two separate things, and I can see why people want to support this president on this. I support the president on this. We had the chairwoman of the RNC, Ronna McDaniel, on at 140, who is the niece of Mitt Romney, who voted against the president in the national emergency setup today. And she said today on the show, while this was happening, that she fully supports the president in this. And I think it's definitely something that's going to get people worked up about this. People want to know if the president is supported by the elected officials. Mickey, thanks for calling the show.
Yeah, Roy Blunt is a jerk for not voting with the president. Yeah. We want a wall. We don't care about these little deals they do. Obama had voted how many times he made national emergencies and nobody bothered him. So what are they coming up with these flimsy excuses?
Yeah, Mickey, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate it. And, you know, the other thing is that the pressure that is Obama would have to face if he declared a national emergency, the support that he would get from his the certainly the Democrats that were elected there to serve in D.C. with him, but also the people who were reporting on the stories and the inflating or deflating of some sort of drama that surrounds these issues. It makes a difference. And I think we need to be paying attention to all of those factors going into why these individuals chose to vote the way they did. Steve, thanks for calling the show.
Hey, Annie. Sorry about getting you off on the driver's license topic the other day.
Oh, no, you're fine.
And my wife lost it, so I got to pay the state of Illinois more money. But anyway, I never hear anybody other than on conservative radio and TV talk about the percentage of the national budget this is going to cost to build this wall. $8.6 billion sounds like a lot of money, but when you break it down, it's just a small percentage. And somebody needs to get that out there. I think if he would present that out to the people, it's a drop in the bucket from the national budget.
Okay, yeah, I thank you for the call, Steve. I appreciate it. That perspective of where the wall funding, how big of a deal is this? It's nothing. President Trump has said that many, many, many times, that you know the amount of money I'm asking here is like chump change. It's like what they spend overseas supporting some other country in a few days. That's what he's asking to defend the southern border. And so the question you have to ask yourself, you know, we all remember Beto, Mr. running for president now, saying at that counter rally against President Trump's rally in El Paso, Texas, suggesting that walls kill people, that people die because walls exist. Well, that's silly. We all know that's silly, but that's the idea that's out there, that somehow or another, because the Democrats have said this and they've said it consistently, they've said it at different times, different people, that the wall in and of itself is immoral. That's the way, in my opinion, that's where the left goes when they know that they can't win a debate on policy, when they can't look at the facts of a situation and win something on that. Then they have to divert into feelings that walls are immoral, that guns are immoral. And we continue to have to push back against this. And the Democrats and those 12 Republicans who voted against the president's national emergency declaration are going to have to answer to their constituents. I assume that Roy Blunt, voting against the national emergency, is going to have to answer to quite a few of his constituents.
I'm going to address this breaking news that's happening. Two rockets were fired today at Tel Aviv in Israel. The Israeli Defense Forces confirmed that two rockets were fired into Israeli territory from the Hamas-controlled Gaza Strip. One of those missiles were intercepted by the Israeli Iron Dome missile defense system, and the other one did hit inside Israel in an uninhabited area, and no injuries have been reported.
All right, well, we will watch that closely. You know, as much as things change, they stay the same. So prayers for everybody involved in that scenario, and peace in the Middle East. Do you think that that will come after Donald Trump tries to figure out what the heck is going on with North Korea? Remember, the president's negotiating with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. All of this stuff is on the plate of the president, and the hardest battle that he's fighting is securing his own southern border. It's pretty crazy. 12 Republican senators voting against Trump's national emergency today. Roy Blunt is one of them. Podcast at radio.com. Go hear Melissa Francis, Ronna McDaniel, or Tyrus if you missed them. We appreciate having you here all the time. 971talk.com/Annie. Listen up. Dave Glover coming next.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.